It's WMFO in Medford, 10:02 in the morning. I'm Mike. How you doing? Just played a couple of songs there to get us up to the top of the hour. Let me tell you what they were. I'm going to start with the fifth song of the set there because there's three of us in the studio, and I'll introduce you in a second, but we're all headbanging because you can't really help it with that. If you're wondering who that was and you haven't looked at the text that goes through when I play a song, that's Mammoth WVH. That's Eddie Van Halen's son, Wolf. And that's from his forthcoming record that'll be called Mammoth 2. Another celebration at the end of the world is that. Okay? I hope if you were sleeping and, you know, just sort of waking up to the show, hope you had a seatbelt on because that was rough. That was good. Just before that, more great pounding rock and roll from Boston. Hammered Saint was just before that with their new single called Dirty Work. If you're looking for a good rockin' show to see here in Boston, there's so many. But when you see Hammered Saint on the bill, go see them. That was just great. Key Acoustics, same thing for these guys, Boston's own. And that was their new single called Where Did It Go? Boston's own Nervous Eaters just before that. From their latest record, their debut with this new lineup on Monsters and Angels. That was Want You Like Before, just a great record. And we're going to have their bass player, Brad, in here next week, talking about all of that good stuff and his long career as a bass player. And I started off with Rick Berlin with the Nickel and Dime Band from their latest record called True Story. That was Step Back. All right, I do have two folks here in the studio with me. One, you know, he's been here. We can't seem to get rid of him. It's Mike Stewart. I'll give a little applause here. Just hello, Mike.
Give him the clap so he doesn't have one.
How do you like being up this early?
Where am I?
Yeah. All right, and the reason that our guest is here is because Mike told me about your music, and he said, you've got to have this guy on the show. And his name is Alan Williams. Welcome, Alan.
Well, good to be here. Thank you.
I know that you drove a little bit to get here, so I appreciate it.
No, it's no worries. When you live in Lowell, Massachusetts, you probably end up driving pretty much anywhere else. So
yeah, I
no
guess worries. So. I grew up in Haverhill.
Ah.
You know, so I pronounce it correctly.
Indeed.
Yeah.
We are connected by the Merrimack.
Yeah, there's no Haverhills around here.
Why not?
How long have you been in Lowell? How long have you lived there?
Oh, I've been living there, I don't know, 8 or 9 years, but I've been teaching there at the university for almost 30.
So you missed, I mean, I've been there since, you know, I'm an old man. So we had a family business there for years and years, so you wouldn't know of it, but that was, because if you had, I guarantee you would have said, oh yeah, we bought our furniture there. But yeah. So anyway, welcome, Alan. You're quite an interesting character.
Okay.
As I reading up on who you are and what you do. First of all, you're not from here. You're a North Carolina native.
That's right, Tar Heel.
And you said you've been here 8 or 9 years, and you mentioned you're at UMass Lowell. By the way, we share a radio frequency, 91.5, and that gets in the way sometimes. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
What brought you to Massachusetts?
You know, like I think a ton of people, we come up to the school, and like a ton of musicians. I didn't come up to Berkeley like a lot do. I ended up at the conservatory at NEC, but came up to school. And never looked back, even though every winter I wonder why the hell I'm still in New England. But you know,
we all do that.
Indeed.
Yeah. How can you help that?
I don't know. But yeah. I knew another life. So,
mm-hmm. So I mentioned that you're an interesting character. I mean, yes, you're a singer-songwriter, and you've got a lot of work out that we're going to talk about, but you've also got a real job. I'm sorry for saying that out loud. But and you mentioned University of Lowell. I'll call you Dr. Alan Williams because you are an academic, sir.
That's all true, yes.
Yeah, you are. And you know, you've got a doctorate in ethnomusicology.
Yes.
Now, I want you to help me make a distinction between, we have a great, beloved guest here who is a musicologist. And he is a professor as well. He teaches, he's a pianist, and his specialty is classical music and pop that he calls. You know, it's not really pop to us, but it's not classical.
Right.
You know, so could you sort of give us a distinction between a musicologist and, let me take a deep breath because it's hard to say, ethnomusicologist?
Very good. Yeah. I mean, ideally, the distinction is pretty slim, if muddy, but ethnomusicologists are interested in the people how music and people intersect. So it's not necessarily
ethnicities.
Mm-hmm. It's ethna, meaning people, music. Mm-hmm. So yeah, or sometimes someone once phrased it as music in culture and culture in music.
Yeah,
I think historically a lot of people think of ethnomusicology as kind of world music oriented studies.
Which makes sense.
A lot of people do that, but actually, as a discipline, it's wide open. So my area of research focus is on recording studios. So what happens in studios? Why do people like it, dislike it? How does the technology shift the music? All that sort of thing.
I of course did a little bit of reading up on it, and it, you know, what I found was this is rather broadly defined as a holistic investigation of music in its cultural contexts, combining aspects of folklore, psychology, cultural anthropology, there's this one there, linguistics, comparative musicology, music theory, and history. So that's a whole thing.
Basically, it's kind of the kitchen sink.
I understand why you said it's muddy. But that's very interesting. But another thing that I found interesting about this is I read that the role of a ethnomusicologist requires that you mask and refrain from expressing your personal likes and dislikes about music. I mean, you just sort of have to say you have to be Switzerland.
Well, that's, you can pretend to be Switzerland, but I think that it's also kind of acknowledged that while that's an attempt, it's usually impossible to truly separate oneself from what you're looking at, listening to. And there's a whole subsection of ethnomusicologists who deeply believe in, you know, being engaged in it and being part of it. So even some of my own research was talking about me being in studios, dealing with situations, and so what was it like for me as a musician or as an engineer or producer? So I think in some ways it gives you one level of insight, what's your own personal perspective, and then you need to sometimes step outside and look at what everybody else is thinking about too.
Yeah. Right. So right. I mean, being a human being, you can't completely black that out. So what you've done is you have the whole other part of you that is a singer-songwriter. And that's how you get that out.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it took me a long time to realize that I didn't have to be completely separate, that sometimes the sort of academic version of me can sort of trickle into the musician me,
right,
and vice versa.
Which is not supposed to be that way.
Well, I don't know. I mean, somebody pointed out at school, like, you know, actually what you're doing is research, so maybe you should...
Well, that's true.
Tout that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I have another quote from you. It says, I make music I make music to try and get at what I feel, to express something beyond words alone. It's in the feel of the strings under fingers and the vibration in my throat, in the emoticon that can sneak up and hit you from behind. That hits home. I mean, I understand that. For you, it really is all about expression and feelings, human feelings about what music does to you.
Yeah, I think if you ask any musician, they may not say that in exactly those words, but I think that's sort of the common phenomenon for listeners as well. But I think maybe what I was trying to shade getting at a little bit there is that I think a lot of times when people want to talk about music, they talk about the words, if there's lyrics to it, but we have a harder time talking about the non-lyric aspects of music. Now that we don't feel them, but we don't seem to articulate it as much. So I was trying to sort of say, you know, sometimes it's just the vibration is what I'm trying to get at somehow.
I'm so glad you said that, because I think of myself as a little bit strange, because I don't hear the lyrics first at all. I have to get the music has to get me. I need the hook, and then I'll figure out what the song's about.
Right, exactly. There's so many pieces of music that you never know what the words are, and it doesn't necessarily matter.
Yeah, and we've all sung the wrong ones to our favorite songs.
Which, you know, and then you start to wonder, well, are they really wrong? Because if it's working for me, my interpretation is perfectly valid too, right?
I know. So you said you've been here about eight, 9 years?
Well, I've been living in Lowell downtown for that time, but I've been teaching at the university for about 30 years and floating around New England, whether Boston or Portland, Maine, or, you know, sort of Metro West for... since 1982.
I see a note here. You said, it says you've been writing, performing, and recording for over 40 years.
Yeah.
So you've been doing this before you got to UL.
Yeah. So doing it at NEC, doing it, you know, as a teenager, like a lot of folks do. But I had a weird connection with some folks. Still one of my closest friends in the world, bass player Greg Porter. We met while we were in high school in different parts of North Carolina, but started making some music together. We came up to school together. We were in, I don't know how many bands we've been in together. And he's still playing. So if we listen to any more recent music of mine, that's he's the bass player.
Was he at the conservatory with you?
He was at the conservatory with me. We were roommates. Our drummer, we were roommates with him after the freshman year. And the drummer still is who we'll listen to as well. So it's sort of like you make a certain type of bond when you're, I think, that age. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to maintain that for all these decades.
It's definitely a fortunate thing. And Brown University, that was just undergrad?
That was graduate. That was graduate. The ethno stuff was at Brown. Yeah.
Okay.
When I was lost and trying to figure out what to do, somebody said, well, maybe teaching might be a good idea. But if you want to teach, you're going to need a fancier degree. So.
Well, there you go. You know, and the thing is, too, you know, as we listen to your music and read up a little bit about you, you know, being a musicologist is one thing. Being an ethnomusicologist, the genres that you are into are not restricted at all. You're kind of like into anything.
That's kind of you. With most ethno folks, you'll find, yeah, we just can't seem to make up our mind about anything. So it's all there.
Classical, jazz, definitely rock. As you know, your latest solo work is, you could characterize it as rock.
I hope so.
You know, country, folk, bluegrass, world music that you mentioned, mainstream pop, all sorts of things. You've also done a couple of different projects. There is a project called Birdsong at Morning that maybe we'll hear a little bit from. You collaborate with Porter and Darlene Wilson. Mm-hmm. On that, and I heard about you from Mike Stewart here. Stop talking so much.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Not Knots and Crosses. That's a beautiful project. I mean, you've got three records there.
That's a long time ago for me, but yeah, and I was one of the drivers, but not necessarily the driver. Carol Noonan, who was my wife for a moment and all that, and Rick Harris, the guitarist, they wrote most of those songs. And we did the sort of Boston club, work your way up from Tuesday night, 8 o'clock, to the weekends thing for years, and got lucky with some radio airplay and self-released records, and then signed with the major label, and then got dropped by the major label. And
there you go.
You know, it's the same old story.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've had several little reunions where I'm still in touch with those folks, and it's nice to gather up every now and again.
I know Rick lives in Ireland.
That makes it a little harder.
It's a longer walk,
yeah. But, you know, he's good. He flies back once a year, usually.
I was wondering, how did the band come together?
Knots and Crosses. That was, interestingly, so that was Roots at NEC. There was a friend, a mutual friend, Juliana Nash, who would go on to found a band, Talking to Animals, with Greg Porter.
Yeah.
And she was working summers at a resort in Maine where it was a beautiful resort, but it was staffed by musicians. So the idea was your wait staff would actually get up and do musical theater that night. So you So there were a lot of NEC people were getting their summer gigs there. And Carol Noonan had started that way and ended up managing the resort. So she lived there year round. And Juliana brought her down to help sing on some recital. And I said, oh my God, that voice. So I started working with her on some stuff, and we got romantically inclined. And then I said to Rick, would you be willing to come in? Because I think there could be a band thing in all of this. And it just slowly morphed. And we started off sort of much more folky, very Richard Thompson-esque. But then we got more amplified because we saw Richard Thompson live and realized, wow, he's loud. He's got drums. It's not quite what we thought, and we like it even better. Mm-hmm. So that became the template for what Knots and Crosses did. Yeah,
I can't imagine you trying to, you know, the old cliche of putting posting something on a bulletin board, wanting to form a band and trying to say, you know, we're going to do this type of music. I looked at a list of the myriad of influences.
Yeah,
I mean, how do you put this in an ad? Pink Floyd, Joni Mitchell, Roxy Music, King Sunny a Day. Brian Wilson, you gotta have Brian Wilson.
You gotta.
Paul Jackson Jr. Led Zeppelin. Okay, there's a jump. The Cars. Neil Finn. I love Crowded House and Split Ends. Oh, yeah. Alan Holdsworth.
Yeah.
Steely Dan. I mean, Steely Dan, either you love them or you hate them.
And I hated them for a long time.
Because they're
time.
Perfect and people can't deal with that.
Well, people kept telling me they were perfect. I think what I realized was wasn't that I hated Steely Dan. I just hated the people that were telling me that I should like Steely Dan.
Oh. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the band that you call it a 30-year trio. That's really cool. And this is the lineup on Currents, pretty much.
Well, it's the core, yeah. So Greg Porter and Ben Whitman on drums and myself. And, you know, we made this record during COVID. We had planned to make the record before COVID. And so we had time because we love to work at Woolly Mammoth, Dave Minahan, Sir David Minahan, the great, illustrious. His studio, Woolly Mammoth, is awesome. But, you know, we had to cancel and rethink, and because Ben lives in Canada now, visa issues became an issue.
Yeah, you're worried about if he came here, you were worried he couldn't get back?
He couldn't get back home.
Yeah.
Yeah. So ended up, fortunately for me, Ben is also a really talented engineer and producer, and so he recorded his drum kit in his basement, and we did the whole file exchange thing. It's an awkward way to work, but a lot of us had to figure it out, and that's how we did it.
Yeah, the pandemic, you know, quote unquote, didn't stop people from being creative. In fact, it fostered more of it.
Right. You just had to figure out, you had to be more creative in figuring out how to do the creativity.
Yeah, because you can't take that away from artists. You got to find a way to do that.
Yeah. I was at some little conference academic thing, and Steve Albini was doing the keynote thing, and he said, you know, people keep telling me the record industry is dying and music is dying, but I cannot pay bands to stop recording. They just
won't
stop.
Different now.
Yeah.
It's just different now, the way that they used to be promoted and controlled, really. It's just different now.
Yeah.
It's much more in their own hands, which is not a bad thing.
I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's a great thing, the hard part. And, you know, a lot of barriers are broken, so everyone has potentially the ability to find an audience and to make their music.
Yeah.
But since everybody does, it's a really crowded field out there.
You know, and college radio is back again, you know,
yeah.
because commercial just sort of turned in on itself and became just so limited.
Well, exactly. It just became a very, 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 very narrow cast. And then, you know, it's why, since I get to interact with college students every day now, what's so beautiful to me is just how eclectic their tastes are. They have access to everything, and they're not like me. They're not responding to somebody telling me Steely Dan is great. They're finding stuff on their own, and they pull together their sort of influences and stuff that they gravitate to, and it's all over the map, and they don't really necessarily define or restrict by genre and all that sort of thing. So freeform radio is sort of their mode of music.
Well, you know, the other thing that's their mode of music, I'll give you two words, instant gratification.
Well, yeah, there's that, too.
It's yin-yang.
Yeah.
It is, because, you know, it used to be that WBCN would play the music and tell you what to listen to and where to go see it.
Yeah.
Now that's our job on college radio.
Yeah, that's true. And BCN used to play a lot of local music in regular rotation.
Yes, they did.
Not just the sort of 3 a.m. Saturday slot, but
and that's what we
really
do.
Cool.
We play it all the time.
Yeah.
What we say all the time is, if we're not playing
local music, we're not doing our job.
That's right.
It's the truth.
Factoid that BCN was started by two Tufts students.
That's right.
And one of their first DJs was from our AM station, JJ Jackson.
Oh my God. Who would go on?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's where the roots are, and it's great that they continue, because without it, there is no scene.
There's no scene.
Yeah. Are the students very aware of a college radio beyond WML?
I don't know. They might be, but they certainly are attuned to UML, and I'm sure the same is true for anybody associated with MFO. It's just you kind of like gravitate to that. It becomes its little circle of folks. And
yeah, music isn't what it used to be. I should say radio isn't what it used to be to the younger generation. It just isn't. But how can it be? You can't miss something you never had.
Well, right. Although, since you can stream this stuff, it's now...
That's
again,
such a huge difference.
It's global. It means that the small local college station is never small.
No,
local.
Some of our best band friends, like over in Stockholm, Sweden, and they listen a lot.
They're listening right now.
It's ridiculous. It's crazy. You had mentioned just about getting back to the Currents, your latest, about the production of it. You said it was such a letdown not to get to spend time with your friends, and you miss that feeling of the energy that happens when you're making music in real time.
Yeah.
Yet you found it really easy to be remote and doing it that way.
Well, I think because everybody that's on the record, for the most part, are people that I've made music with so many times and for so long, you can just imagine what they're going to do, or it's easy to imagine them being in the room with you even though they're not. I'm not sure what I would have done if I were trying to just work with folks or try to, who do I know that might be able to do something? And although there were a couple of nice things that happened on this record in particular, where I reconnected with some folks because we were all in isolation and connecting via, you know, whatever media, social media worlds, I remembered a guitar player I knew in high school that I hadn't seen in 34 or 40 years. And I knew that he was sort of like doing well in New York as a session guy, but so I contacted him out of the blue and he said, yeah. And we just sort of, again, that file exchange ability, there's the negative, you don't get to sit across the room and catch up.
Right.
But the beautiful thing is, you know, if he's busy, and then 3 a.m. on Tuesday.
Do it on his own time, yeah.
Does it on his own time.
Now, there's a mention here of the additional musicians on Currents called the cast of characters.
Yeah.
Is that one of those folks? That
no,
you're
usually,
talking about?
I always, lately, it seems like I put string players, orchestral strings on a lot of stuff. So I always give them a name, a different name every album. So
okay.
This one, they were the cast of characters.
10-piece string section, that's hard to say. And a horn section consisting of UMass Lowell faculty and students.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That was cool. That was, that's the first time I've ever written for horns, that one song. And, I didn't know what I was doing, so I figured I would bring in people who at least would be friendly, and they were, and one of the faculty members played an awesome trumpet solo, so it was definitely better than I had even dreamed it would be. So that's a nice. It's great to get to work with your colleagues and with students. I tend to try to work with both whenever I can.
Yeah. What an opportunity for them.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Excuse me. I was listening to a lot of Knots and Crosses recently before we came on. And I wanted to ask you, the songwriting in that era, I know that you and Carol are husband and wife, was it more personal because of things that were going on or just a reflection of what was going on around you? And is it different now because you're in a totally different situation now? You're miles away from that.
That's a really good question. So I think, again, mostly it was Carol and Rick that were doing the songwriting.
Yeah.
And, you know, knowing what I know about them, they were writing from a fairly personal place. I think Rick tended to he would write about people that he knew rather than necessarily about himself.
Yeah.
Carol would do both. And so it's kind of interwoven in there. I don't think that there were too many songs. We sort of had the Fleetwood Mac parallels in terms of, you know, implosions and trying to play publicly. Huh. But I don't think we had the material where it's songs about me or vice versa that you're struggling to perform. But I've never been quite so hard on my sleeve-ish. I tend to filter it through other characters or perspectives.
Yeah, they seem very personal. That's why I was just wondering if that was the case. Or I know as a musician, songwriter, sometimes you take a collage of different things and you put them together. And sometimes people go, is that song about me? Well, maybe about this much.
Right, exactly. I wouldn't say no, but it's not completely so either. Yeah. So I figure if Carol says something nice, it was probably about somebody else. If she says something mean, it was probably about me.
Oh, okay.
So on this latest record, I mean, you know, you can certainly draw an understanding of the title of the album, Currents. You say, oh, that's my latest album. But I think, and you can tell me if this is true or not, it's got more meanings than that. It also has an awful lot to do with the subject matter.
Yeah.
What was happening currently.
Exactly. So, I mean, I do tend to do the wordplay a bit if I can. So Currents is talking about... what's current events. It's talking about, there's several songs that have water imagery, and there's a song, the title song has a verse that's about an incident where I did watch somebody drown in the ocean, which is not something that I want to do frequently. It's also a little bit talking about that electric current, that sort of network, sort of some of the music I've made, a lot of it, especially with Birdsong at Morning and to some degree Knots and Crosses, was a little more laid back, quiet, slower, introspective. This record's got a little more amplification to it, so I wanted to highlight that there's some electricity in it. And also just thinking about time. Current versus past, future, etc.
Yeah, I did notice references to it being used as a noun, the current.
Yeah. So... And I think part of it is just you get getting older. You start thinking about where am I? How old am I? How much time is left?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you spend time thinking about how it used to be. Tick, 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 tick. So.
Well, you look like a child next to the two of us. Especially.
Every year I cut a limb off and I count the rings to see how old I am.
Yeah, that'll only work for a little while. Yeah.
I want to do a shout out to my friend Iona at K A WLX in Berkeley. She's listening today.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for tuning in.
Indeed, yeah. Thanks.
So let's get into this record a little bit. I want to play some stuff for the sure. folks since we've yacked about, you know, who you are and what you're doing, where you came from. Let's just highlight a couple of the songs. One of the more pointed songs on the album and one that we're going to hear is Season of the Lottery.
Mm.
And you said it began to coalesce early in the pandemic. Yeah. But you really started thinking about it the summer before. And and it's got roots in hundreds of years of American history, too.
Yeah.
And the song, when we hear it, is very much that. So talk a little bit, about, if you would, about Season of the Lottery.
So Season of the Lottery was inspired a little bit by a lot of the stuff that was happening related to the Black Lives Matter stuff, where protesters were also then being assaulted and where... control police forces were being, it's like the violent imagery and a sense that I thought that there was a lot of chaos going on, that when I stepped back, I thought, well, actually, it seems to be the result of systemic issues. It's not just random.
Well,
there's an this stuff's bound to happen when you put all those ingredients.
It's an ugly realization of the word lottery, because I think you're talking about human beings.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awful.
The random thing was right, exactly. That we were seeing so many people whose names we can sometimes recall, sometimes we forget them. And I was thinking about, you know, Breonna Taylor. That's a terrible story, and it's completely random. It's just completely random. She's asleep, and then she's dead.
Yeah.
It's just wrong. So, and you know, there was the wildfires in California, and you're like, you know, weird how your house doesn't burn, but your neighbor's is nothing left but cinders. And so just that sense that the world was out of control, was a bit of the lottery thing about it. And,
lottery is a random thing, but the problem is a lot of this isn't random. It affects people. And
exactly.
Then it doesn't affect other people for a real particular reason.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Not cool.
So anyway, so Season of the Lottery. But this one is a song, interestingly, that the words came last. So for everybody that was recording it, they were listening.
Really?
They were listening to me sing the same melody and rhythm pattern, but I was using the lyrics to All Along the Watchtower.
As one does,
because they totally fit. They fit the rhythm pattern I needed, but I didn't know what they were going to be. So.
And you would have been sued if you put it out that way.
Well, yes. But so every time I hear this song, I partly hear what I wrote and then partly still hear Dylan going on in my
interesting. Head. I wonder if I can do that when we play it later.
Yeah,
we'll
right.
see. We'll see. And there's one cover on the record, which is a... there's a lot of obscure Beatles songs. And this is kind of obscure, but you know it's George,
yeah.
You know, because, you know, you've got the sitar. But you sort of reimagined how that would be
right.
Without a sitar.
Right. So, you know, I do covers on almost everything I've ever done. There's a cover, Knots and Crosses did covers, blah, 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 blah. And I never tackled the Beatles, even though that's kind of how I got into the whole game. So you have to figure out, you can't touch the big classics. There's why in the world would anyone do Hey Jude? It's just good luck.
New single, Love Me Do.
Right. Yeah. Why would you do that?
No.
So how can you find, and when you talk about Beatles, obscure is very much a relative term, because the most obscure Beatles is still known by billions of people.
Yeah.
But I thought, you know, the George Harrison Love You Too is an interesting song, especially when I started thinking about my own material that was going to be on this album. Because there's a, you know, he's what, like 24 years old, but he's already thinking about, you know, before I'm a dead old man, like the time is passing thing is kind of interesting. So a lot of times when I choose a cover song, it's because I focus on an element that I had overlooked. Like, I never listened to the words when I was getting into the Beatles, but it was this cool sitar thing, and it was kind of, that was what was interesting to me. Then when I'm, you know, in my 50s, I might look back and say, actually, these words are interesting. I can relate to these words now in my 50s in ways that I never could when I was 15.
Yeah, I mean, I totally hear that. And my comment before about that, I don't hear the words first. I mean, that hits home for me. And if I might, I want to read another quote of yours about this song,
sure.
Because it really made sense. You said the basic idea of covering Love You Too was to transplant the Indian exotica of the original. So the opening sitar becomes slack key guitar. And you said, I try to reference the original while gradually moving into more folk guitar kind of lines. And hopefully you can hear the shape of George Harrison's impressive melody work even in this new guise.
Yeah.
And with the harmonic language now more Ry Cooder than Ravi Shankar. And you thought you'd push a little harder into the darkness of the lyric. So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty deep, Alan.
I don't know if it's that deep, but it's me scrambling to try to explain what I did.
To a simpleton like me, I mean, that's a very interesting way to describe something that is just a feeling. Okay. Music is a feeling.
Well, music,
and that's you're kind of saying the same thing.
Music is absolutely always a feeling, but it is also other things simultaneously. So when you get into the music people that make it and think about it constantly, then we might say, okay, see, my guitar is kind of imitating the sitar. It's not exact. It's this shape. It's not the same pitch.
No,
as blah, 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 blah. But it's going, yeah. I mean, I think the feeling is there, but in other words, do something different with it, because otherwise, let's just listen to the Beatles, because it's pretty good.
Right. As you said, you don't, or Smitty before that was just here, that was saying when he covers a song, he doesn't want to be karaoke. And
yeah,
that's the same
exactly.
thing. You just don't want to do that. All right, so we're going to hear those two songs, and there's one more I want to play called Giving You a Warning.
Okay.
All right, you snicker a little bit. Tell us about that one.
Well, it's a silly little song.
Well, it's a real poppy.
It's poppy, yeah. But I, what's wrong with Neil Finn? He's brilliant.
Oh, God.
And so for me, this is my attempt to try to figure out how Neil Finn can be both kind of goofy, silly, but at the same time have something that actually, it's very easy to apprehend his music. It's catchy. He always has a quirky little way of phrasing something and framing the idea, but it holds into your brain because there's a depth to it as well. So I was trying to thread that needle. I'm not sure I successfully did, but that's the inspiration.
Well, to me, what you're talking about really, I always say music is so subjective.
Mm.
So everybody's going to hear their own thing. And by doing what you just described, I mean, it's that lets people sort of glom onto whatever it is they glom onto. And it's attractive to hear a song that's a little silly or has a hook, of course, or whatever. And that's what you try to do.
That's what I try.
Yeah.
Maybe I succeed. Maybe not. Nonetheless, it's fun to try.
Well, now's the time when we judge you.
Okay,
no, just kidding.
Please do.
All right. So from the latest record, Currents, I'm going to start with Season of the Lottery and segue beautifully into Giving You a Warning. And then that Beatles cover, Love You Too. And everybody, I know out there, you're after hearing all this, you're thinking, what is this going to sound like? I mean, he likes everything. Who is this guy? Well, here you go. This is Season of the Lottery. Remember what it's about? It's about a lottery, and it's what we lived through, a human being lottery, and all of that comes out of that. So, Season of the Lottery. This is Alan Williams here at WMFO in Medford.
What's that pounding at the door? Wonder who it could be. Not expecting 3 a.m. special deliveries. Or is that thunder rumbling low? Explosions in the street. There's nothing left that won't catch fire. Just turn up. Maybe the flames ignore your house. while your neighbor's burns. Maybe the bullet finds your heart, maybe it finds your head. Maybe the target's on your back, sleeping in your bed.
Swimming pool.
to show ya. It's guaranteed to make you laugh. A pornographic haiku and some interesting photographs. I'm giving you a warning. I'm giving you a warning. I'm giving you a warning. On your mark, I'm giving you a warning. 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 I'm giving you a warning from my heart. From my heart. From my heart. Each day just goes so fast. I turn around its past. You don't get time to hang the sign on me. Thank you.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You've accidentally cut your daughter's bangs unevenly. Do you A, line things up a centimeter from her hairline?
Man, oh man.
No, sweatbands are so hot right now. Everyone's wearing them. Like that basketball player and that other basketball player.
B, get spiritual.
Mom, where did all the mirrors go?
A reflection could never capture our true selves.
Huh?
Beauty is within.
C, look on the bright side.
Less time blow drying, more time texting.
Or D, show empathy.
Mom, you really don't have
to... Twinsies!
I kinda love it. As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
It's WMFO in Medford. Talk about a non sequitur. But yeah, you gotta stick those things in there for sure.
Your parents were aliens, right?
Yeah, it's Mike and Mike and Alan here. Just heard a couple of tracks from Alan Williams. We heard all from their latest record called Currents, Season of the Lottery, followed by Giving You a Warning, followed by Love You Too. And I just want to, Alan, I'll ask your permission. We've got a thread here going on Facebook, and we've got somebody on here that hadn't heard of you, believe it or not.
Oh, I can imagine.
And he had this to say. This is Stephen Ruprecht, who is the friend of one of our contributors who comes in here a lot. He says, wow, blown away by Alan Williams. His electric style reminds me of Alan Holdsworth and Scott Henderson, both of whom are monster players. Also loving the acoustic playing and songwriting. Big thanks for introducing me to Alan.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I won't take credit for the electric guitar solo on Season of the Lottery. That's my friend Chris Biesterfeldt from high school days, who is in New York, and he's who we were talking about reconnecting. But yeah, the acoustic guitar and the writing, I'm afraid that's my fault.
Well, you got to, give credit and take the blame when you need to do it. So before we go, I want to play something from one of your other projects that we mentioned, Birdsong at Morning. And you had two versions of a project called Annals of My Glass House, Volume 1 and Volume 2. This is from 1. These both came out in the same year,
right? Well, so essentially what we did, we put out EPs, 6-song EPs, 4 of them, and collected them all into one big box set. But then when you do streaming-related delivery, they charge you more money if you want to do 4 EPs. So I just threw the first 2 EPs and called it Volume 1 and the second, or Volume 2. So it's something we put out over the course of a year and a half, but I like to think it was just one album. So,
okay. Yeah. And a little bit about this particular project, this band, versus what we just heard?
Birdsong at Morning began as an exercise for Darlene and Greg and I and some other friends of ours to try to restart making music, because all of us had thrown our instruments in the closets and had walked away from music for, in my case, for 10, 12 years. And so we sort of tentatively were gathering on Sunday afternoons to try to make some noise together. And suddenly I was inspired to write a song, which had not happened for 10 years. And I started to play it, and Greg and Darlene started to spontaneously harmonize. And suddenly, instead of this sort of free-form, loose thing, it sounded like maybe we should put a little effort into becoming something. And that's the beginning of Birdsong at Morning. Anyways, it's what resurrected my interest in making music after some time away.
So, very important.
Yeah indeed.
That's big time. So this one's called Dreaming.
Yeah, again, following the thread of me doing cover versions of stuff, this was pretty quiet, introspective interpretation of a song that many people recognize. Once I start playing it, they're like, wait a minute, I know this song. And it doesn't always come to tip of the tongue as to who it is, I think, because it's a little bit of a different interpretation.
So. Okay, cool. So we'll play this, and then after that, we'll say our goodbyes and say our hellos to Kirsten, who's going to do something about the women.
Cool.
This is Dreaming Bird Song at Morning at WMFO.
I have your fresh evidence, CD.
When I met you in the restaurant, well, I could tell you were no debutante. Well, you asked me what's my pleasure, a movie or a measure. I had a cup of tea. Told you of my dreaming is free, dreaming is free. Well, I don't wanna live on charity, pleasure's real or is it fantasy? Real is living verity. Where people stop and stare at me, we just walk on by. We just keep on dreaming. Dream, dream, walk in a 2 mile. Dream, dream, meet me at the turnstile. Never met her, I'll never forget her. Dream, dream, here and for a little while. Dream, dream, live it up tonight and fade away. Oh, radiate. Lie, sitting by and watch the river flow. I, sitting by and watch the traffic go. Imagine something of my very own, something I could have at home. I'd build the road to go, just to have some dreaming. Dreaming is free. Dreaming. Dreaming is free.
All right, so it's WMFO in Medford, and we just heard Birdsong at Morning, another project from Alan Williams, our guest. It's from Annals of My Glass House, Volume 1, and that was Dreaming. I did recognize, yes, as you said.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, you're very prescient in knowing what I'm going to do. But yeah, that was a beautiful version of that. And all your music is really just lovely to listen to.
Well, thank you.
Honestly. Thank you. And yeah. I so appreciate your drive in here.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. It's great for both mics to invite me to come on in. And Knots and Crosses was at WMFO. Oh, Lord. 30 years ago.
Yeah, sorry.
Where can you purchase former music and current music?
Yeah, so all of my stuff under my name and the Birdsong at Morning stuff is available either through my website, alanwilliamsevidence.com, or bluegentianrecords.com. It's available streaming everywhere. Right now, Knots and Crosses is not on the Streamosphere, but I have to talk to Rick and Carol about getting that rectified.
I think Carol still has stuff out, right?
She has some stuff, but even a lot of her stuff she's not put
and Rick,
up. And,
and Rick,
know.
Too.
Yeah, and, you know, partly because it costs more money to put it up than you'll ever see coming back, so, you know.
That's so, so very
true.
You're
going to leave the station without me giving my spiel for Bandcamp.
Please do.
Please do.
That's where I buy all of my music these days, because they do give more of the proceeds to the artists, although website is probably even a better place, because then the artist is selling your own music. But Bandcamp...
Yeah, I think Bandcamp's a great platform because it really does support both the artists themselves and the communities that evolve around them. I think there's just a greater sense of connection. People, they're like Bandcamp devotees who...
Right. Well, and they have a good communication system.
Yeah.
And at least I have never put anything on Bandcamp because I'm not an artist. But when I have strong-armed some artists into it, they said that the process was not that difficult.
So. That's. I mean, the vibe definitely is strong for Bandcamp, and I thought about doing that too, but I'm a little old school and I still press CDs like an idiot, so I have to set up a whole website in order to ship actual product.
Yes.
All right. Well, Alan, thank you so much for coming in. Really appreciate it. We'll have to do it again.
Yeah, I'd love to.
And we're definitely going to enjoy playing your music here for sure. And the audience, as I told you, has really been like, wow, really, thanks for introducing us to this artist.
Likewise.
So it's really good.
Thanks for checking it out.
And I'll forgive you for Lowell, just messing with our signal.
Yes.
But that's okay.
Well, you know.
And Mike Stewart, thanks for being here.
I just want to say WMFO Medford.
Ah, yeah, the legal ID. All right.
1.5
FM and web streaming worldwide.
Wow.
There you go.
And Mike, what's happening next?
Thanks for asking. That lovely voice you hear right now is our friend Kirsten Chervinsky, who's here for something about the women.
I am, and I am bringing a bit of Jane with me. Jane had sent out an article having to do with women's representation in the rock